Hello, welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast Between the Sticks. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the illuminated voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
That is me.
You went and switched on the lights in Watford this week.
I did, alongside Watford legends Lloyd Doyley and Tommy Smith. It was very enjoyable. All three of us, hand on the button at the same time. It was very intimate. It was very enjoyable. There was a big crowd. Not necessarily for us. Obviously, there was lots of festivities, lots of things going on, and the big crescendo, which was the turning on of the lights. And we pressed the button. I then realised the button isn't actually hooked up to any lights. It's just kind of there as a prop, which was a little bit disappointing because we missed the timing. The lights came on and realised we hadn't pressed the button. A little bit embarrassing. And the lights, I mean, they were okay, but it's Watford at the end of the day.
It's not Oxford Street,
it's
is it?
It's not, no. But a few lights did come on, we wowed the crowd, and everyone had a great time.
You actually thought that the big, massive, elaborate button was somehow rigged up to the actual lights, half a mile down the road.
That's what I thought, yeah. Brilliant. And we had the awkward question as well, so we had a small interview up on stage, and for anyone that knows Lloyd Doyley, absolute legend of Watford, he doesn't give many interviews, to be honest, and he was asked the question, what would you say to this Watford squad who are currently bottom of the league? Bear in mind, there's a crowd of like several thousand people waiting on Lloyd's answer. He just said, I'll just tell them to enjoy themselves. So there you go, wise words from Mr. Doyley.
Brilliant from Lloyd Doyley. That, and I'm sure Lloyd Doyley will be listening to the Goalkeepers Union podcast Between the Sticks, as are many others. Now remember, if you'd like to get in touch, very easy to do so at GK Union on Twitter or hello@goalkeepersunion.net. Right, plenty of action to cover over the course of the weekend and, of course, in the midweek with Championship, League One and Champions League fixtures. But first, we are going to go back to the London Stadium and back to Roberto. We've spoken about him numerous times. They lost 3-2 in Jose Mourinho's first game in charge of Spurs. That is now seven games without a win since Lucas Fabianski was out of the side. People saying that he was culpable for the first goal, maybe the third goal too. I'll let you take it from here. It's not looking good.
It's not. No, they decided to stick with him. They didn't go with David Martin. We said that they might in the last show, and they decided to stick with him. And unfortunately, it didn't get much better. I mean, look, it's a bit of a spiral because then what's ended up happening, whether it's, you know, it's chicken and egg, whether it's a case of Roberto's performances and then the lack of belief in him within the squad, and suddenly West Ham seemingly find themselves behind in every game they play at the moment, or whether it's the other way around, that the West Ham team are struggling, and of course that's then filtered into Roberto, and with each game he's struggling, it seems, to find his confidence. But yeah, it was another tough appearance. I mean, the first goal, it's strange. We have seen him make some very, very good saves. There is some ability there, of course. It's not like he is a complete dud, of course. But in this one, if you're to break it down, it's just beating him too easily. It's as simple as that. I think when he sets, his hands are slightly too high, in my opinion. Only ever so slightly. But what it then means is it kind of goes in that gap next to his hip, whereby if he sets his hands almost in a neutral position, then it hits him, if nothing else. But also gives him a better chance to react and get his left hand to make a big parry, or potentially get two hands across and smother it and parry it out, maybe back into play, but at least get a save on the ball. But in the end, it just kind of goes right next to him and through him. It doesn't look great. And in the end, I know it led to some ironic cheers from the West Ham fans when he did some positive things later in the game. And it's a horrible position to be in. And look, I want to be careful because we've all been there. As goalkeepers, we've all been there where it feels like you cannot do right. And at the moment, he's got that going on. He doesn't have the luxury of coming out by the sound. And I say luxury, and I mean that in the greatest sense, in that you think of goalkeepers in the past and have had a tough time. Peter Schmeichel even had a tough time towards the end of his career at Manchester United. And at the time, they took him out for three or four games. I think Gary Walsh came in from memory, and they gave him a small amount of time out of the team to clear his head to then come back in. They're not doing that with him. Now, whether that's a lack of belief in David Martin, we're not too sure. Whether it's just the case that they feel that it will turn around, they want to play him until it does turn around, but he's in a really tough spot. He's struggling to get his confidence by all accounts. He doesn't look like he's enjoying himself. His body language isn't particularly positive, and it's not getting any easier for West Ham.
No, and the fans are speaking too, actually. We put this out on Twitter, did a little grab of his position when that went in. Firstly, actually, a bit of commentary, and a particular man called Glenn Hoddle is going to crop up many times on today's podcast. His analysis of that first goal was keeper's weak, he's fallen backwards, he's gone backwards. For me, Roberto, look, his body weight has gone backwards. He's got to be doing better. We'll go on to the reaction from the fans. We just put a little tweet out saying thoughts on Roberto, and the response wasn't great. Travis Newton, awful, week in, week out, doesn't look like a pro keeper. Brian said, I think he's won a competition to be a pro player. Hopeless is a huge understatement. Glenn English, as a West Ham fan, every time the ball gets near him, the technique and decision-making scare the life out of me. Andy Costello, very poor technically, simply awful. It just went on and on. People just not happy with Roberto whatsoever.
No, tough spot. It really is. Like I say, we've all been there to an extent. I'm sure every goalkeeper listening in, we've all had times when things just seemingly are going against you week in, week out. I hope it does turn around for him because it's not a nice position to be in. He won't be enjoying himself at the moment, full stop. You know, I think it's very tough too. And it's not like he's going out and purposefully playing poorly. It's just not happening for him. And a point I made last week, and I stick by it, you're stepping into the shoes of Fabianski, who is a fantastic goalkeeper. West Ham fans absolutely adore him. It was always going to be tough. And in fairness, it just hasn't gone his way. And naturally, West Ham fans will be excited for Fabianski to come back.
Now to the Man City-Chelsea game, City winning 2-1, but going 1-0 down with an N'Golo Kante goal. We spoke about this off-air. Now, I personally believe that Edison was not necessarily at fault, but I believe he made a decision that he didn't need to make by coming out and giving Kante the opportunity to score. Benjamin Mendy was there. We've got N'Golo Kante on the angle. Benjamin Mendy is there shepherding him to a sense. If Edison doesn't come out, N'Golo Kante doesn't get a shot away. Or he gets a shot away and it trickles just like it did into his arms. The fact that Edison came out gave Conte more of a chance of scoring, which he then did.
And I disagree. And I disagree you also made the point off air about it being, oh, it's Conte. Well, for a start, a goalkeeper won't know what player it is. You don't look up and think, okay, who is it? It's Ronaldo, therefore I'll do this. Or it's, I'm trying to think of Titus Bramble, no disrespect to Titus Bramble. But you know, you don't look as to who the player is and say, right, okay, they're not a prolific striker, therefore I'm going to do something different. You make the decision based on how the play's developing. Now, the part to this as well is that you don't necessarily know that it's going to trickle towards you. That's the other part. Like, when he's come through, it might have been that he is half a yard further forward than the defender, and he's actually got a free shot. Now, had he stayed a bit deeper and he had a free shot, he might have given him more of the goal to aim at, put it in the corner, and then we're saying, like, why didn't you come and spread? You could have got within half a yard, spread, probably made the save. So what he's ended up doing is he come out and he spread. It's actually a decent spread. He got very, very close, which is correct. So by the textbook, he's done everything correctly. And if anything, the fact that it's such a bad strike is the reason it's beaten him. So this is where you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. If he stays a bit deeper and he gets beaten, we're saying, well, why weren't you a bit braver? Why don't you come and get to his feet? Similarly, he's gone, he's spread, it's trickled past him and literally trickled into the goal. It looks bad, but for me, he's made the right decision.
I'm not entirely convinced
by
that one.
You're not having it, are you?
I don't know. It's one of those, isn't it? This is a good thing. And again, this is a good reason why we do this podcast. For me, that's where goalkeepers almost make it too easy. Because yes, if N'Golo Kante does get the shot away, but where he was and the fact that Mendy was almost covering it, I don't think that Kante would have been able to get the shot away.
I know we're going to touch on the Simon Moore incident later. And there's certain similarities in that the decision to come and spread is a tough one. And sometimes you can make the right decision by spreading and the right decision by staying. Similarly, you can make the wrong decision both ways. And this is one of those situations where I think that, look, had he stayed and stayed a little bit deeper and set, again, he gives himself a good chance of making the save. Similarly, doing what he did, he gives himself a good chance of making the save. Ultimately, the only way you can decide this would be based on percentages. Now, I don't know if there's stats out there to suggest, and you can't do it because it's ultimately you can't replicate that exact moment and doing the two techniques. But you'd almost want to do like a case study of 1,000 of these incidents. And then you might come to the conclusion that 75% are saved when you spread and only 72% saved when you stay deep. Therefore, you should always spread. Well, look, it's not as simple as that. And it's a judgment call. I understand why Edison made the decision in that moment. I don't think it's an error. I understand that the goal doesn't look particularly good in the end because it trickles in. And I think it's the fact that it was such a bad strike that it beats him. So, again, he could have made the other decision, but I think if I was in his shoes, I would have done the same thing.
Very quickly going to touch on a few so nears yet so fars in the Premier League this weekend. Arsenal 2, Southampton 2, a penalty from James Ward-Prowse, which was saved by Bernd Leno, but then the rebound was scored. Same thing happened in the Brighton-Leicester game where Matty Ryan saved Jamie Vardy penalty. It was put in by James Maddison. It was actually brought back and then Vardy scored again. We saw it in the Watford-Burnley game where Ben Foster very nearly saved a penalty, but it did the classic palm onto the post and the old spin back.
Yeah.
Same thing happened in the Palace-Liverpool game. Vicente Guaita from Sadio Mane's shot, parried, good save, hit the post, did the old spin back. Never happened to you?
Did it happen? Oh, you put me on the spot here. I can't think of one that it did, but you're right. It's that again, without getting too scientific, of course, if you parry it onto the post in that way, there is going to be an element of spin on the ball. And I felt sorry in all of those instances for different reasons. And we'll just touch on them very quickly. But I did feel sorry for all the goalkeepers. Had Ben Foster made the save, it would have been a phenomenal save, full stretch. And he very, very nearly did. And unfortunately, that was the second goal, which then pretty much killed off that game. Certainly nothing he could have done. He made a good save actually on the third goal as well. But unfortunately, it wasn't a good day for Watford. Touching on the others, look, do you know what, it's tough because you can look and
was Leno at fault maybe?
No, this is it, and this is why I want to be so careful. You don't get many opportunities to be a hero as a goalkeeper. One is a penalty, so if we're going to start critiquing it, then I think that's harsh, because ultimately it's a good save. He's read it well and he's got down and made the save. It wasn't at a perfect height, not that I like that expression at all, so he's actually done a lot of things right. Ultimately, again, if he could have had it again, he would have loved to have parried it in an ever so slightly different area. But no, I think we give credit for making the save, and ultimately it's well followed up. And the other one, the Maddison one, I mean, that would have driven Matty Ryan crazy, the fact that he was encroaching and these crazy rules and retaken and whatever. But again, very good save. And actually, the angle was fine. It was a good finish from Maddison to come in and put it in the corner in the way he did. So certainly no fault there whatsoever. But unfortunately, it still resulted in a goal.
A good goalkeeper, Matty Ryan. He's one of those, I know we've spoken about him a few times before. Not excellent, not outstanding, just does all the good things right. And I have to say, he's one of the quickest I've ever seen come off his line. He's rapid in his 18-yard box.
No, he's good. Intelligent. Very intelligent goalkeeper. He's got all the attributes. One of the things is he's not the most imposing of goalkeepers, which is nothing to do with him. Not his fault. Just his frame.
Kind of genetics, no.
Yeah, but it's just his frame. Now, he's not the most imposing. Now, that will count against him at times, which is unfair, but that's just the way it is, unfortunately. Like, managers still, I think we're getting better, but managers still want the 6'5" goalkeeper in goal. He's certainly not that. But in terms of his game, as you say, he's your classic, for me, your 8 out of 10 at everything. And he's got a couple of areas where he's really strong. Speed, in particular, very, very strong. Intelligence, very strong. And then I think everything else is more than good enough. He's 7s and 8s across the board, and hence why. And also, he's there. He very rarely gets injured as well. He's there week in, week out. Always turns up. Great mentality, great body language. Real asset to Brighton.
Jordan Pickford, I want to very quickly touch on as well. Just one clean sheet in 11 for him now in the Premier League. 4 in total for the season. He made 2 in his first 2 games. When you look at it that way, it's 2 in what? A very long amount of time. Norwich at the weekend, they lost 2-0. Now, Norwich had only scored once away from home all season prior to Saturday's game. And I'm not saying it's the fault of Jordan Pickford, the goals he wasn't at fault for. But one particular stat I thought was interesting was the fact that Pickford has played in every EFL Cup game this season. Mm. I mean, that's rare for a top-flight goalkeeper, especially an England international goalkeeper, considering that he's playing international games as well. They've not brought in Jonas Lersel. They've not brought in Martin Stecklenburg. Pickford has played every game.
That is strange. No, you're right. That is strange. By the way, he played really well at the weekend. I have to say, he made a couple of really good saves, and I was generally impressed with his game. So, look, clean sheets. We've just got to be so careful when it comes to clean sheets as a stat, because, again, go back to it. There's only so much within your control. We talked last year about when it came out at the end of the season as to how many shots goalkeepers had faced. And I want to say Neil Etheridge had faced 4 times as many as Alisson. So, technically, he's going to concede 4 times as many goals, you would think. And there are certain stats out there that can give you a bit of an indication as to how a goalkeeper's doing. Look, is Jordan Pickford having his best season? Possibly not. I'd argue that. Has he been very good in an England shirt? Yes, he has. He really suits the way that Gareth Southgate wants to play. So, again, I think we've just got to be careful as to what we look into. I thought he was very good at the weekend.
Big shout out to Will Crellin as well. The Fleetwood Town goalkeeper handed his EFL debut at 19 years old this weekend, by the way. Local lad, nearly kept a clean sheet. Tranmere scored in the 87th minute. It's an interesting situation there because they've had Alex Cairns and Matt Gilkes, two experienced goalkeepers, but he was first choice for the FA Cup clash against Barnet before the international break. He's then come in and carried on.
Yep, Billy Crellin, good lad. He's done very well. In fact, he's involved at England in the younger age groups. Been on loan at Chorley. I actually lived in Chorley briefly when
did
I
you?
Was at Blackburn Rovers. I did. Quite a town. Do you know what? It's a true
did
story.
You turn on the Christmas lights?
No, they haven't invited me back, actually. True story. I got my loan to Blackburn, needed to find a place quickly, so I looked on a map and I went by which town had the biggest letters, because normally the biggest letters mean it's a slightly bigger town. So I looked around. You had Preston, which was okay. Obviously Manchester was big, but it was a little bit too far away. I see Chorley in big letters. I thought, oh, that must be a major town. So I went and found a place there within a day or two, moved in. Realised that Chorley actually isn't the hub of all activity, it turns out. So, sorry to anyone in Chorley. It's a lovely place. But anyway.
Did you stay there for the duration of the time that you were at Blackburn?
Yes.
Did you?
I spent a year there, yeah. If fact, where I lived, it was very nice, right near Bolton's training ground, a place called Buckshaw Village. There's some information for you. Anyhow, yes, he did play for Chorley on loan, but he has now got his chance. Now, Fleetwood, who, of course, Alex Cairns has been there and is there, top goalkeeper, been linked with West Ham and several other clubs. They've got two brilliant goalkeepers there in Alex Cairns and in Billy Crellin. And he has been coming through now for several years, been on the radar of England quite a bit. So it's interesting that he's now getting his opportunity. I think we'll hear his name a lot more.
Some midweek championship action we're going to focus on now. Luton 2, Charlton 1. Now, this first goal, I don't know about you. Great strike, by the way, by Pelion Panzu. Great strike from him, the Luton player. Luton actually won the game, of course, after going 1-0 down. But the first goal from Mpanzu, Dylan Phillips is being mauled by Luton striker James Collins. He is so offside and so interfering with play, it is beyond belief. But the goal was given.
It was incredible. By the way, both goals should have been disallowed. If it was a Premier League with VAR, the beauty of VAR, which we'll touch on at some point. Don't shake your head, Mr. Beadle. We'll touch on that at some point. The second one would have been disallowed as well. Handball. But right, let's touch on the first one in particular. You're right. It was so obvious at the time. He was being manhandled. He's offside. And they've claimed it's not interfering with play. Well, look, all the players went over to the linesman. The linesman didn't flag, obviously, at the time. So then the referee does consult with the linesman to basically say, look, was he interfering? Was he offside? And I could tell at the moment, and, you know, I've got to be careful what you say, of course, when it comes to officials, but the fact that it was at Luton, the fact that it is quite a passionate atmosphere there, I do just wonder whether that impacted the decision, because it was so obvious. And frustrating from Charlton's point of view. Look, Luton were arguably the better team on the night, I would say. Just, they certainly had more opportunities. However, that being said, both goals shouldn't have counted. And from Dylan Phillips' point of view, it's so disappointing. He's been fantastic this season. I'm sure all Charlton fans will agree with that. And again, it's cost him a clean sheet and unjust circumstances.
Yeah, absolutely. He made a great penalty save as well, didn't he, at the weekend against Cardiff City. The other game between Fulham and Derby, 3-0. Now, a mini commentary corner here with Michael Brown, of all people. This was on Keller Roos for the first goal. The ball was whipped in by Boubacar Kamara, and then Bobby Cordova-Reed sort of stretched out a right leg and it went beyond Keller Roos. Now, on first glance, you could say that maybe Keller Roos was in the wrong position. Michael Brown, fantastic ball in, but you've got to sort of question there the goalkeeper, Keller Roos. I had him at Port Vale. He's done very well since, but you can see there his position. I know the ball comes in. You've got to stay in the centre of your goal. He'll be disappointed with that.
Right, okay. Do I need to comment? Or?
I don't know. What do you think?
I mean, look, Keller, he had a bad night, in fairness for him. I think the last goal as well, he's gone to clear it and it's he sort of duck-hooked it into the centre and they broke and scored. I mean, it's tough. And again, goalkeepers will understand. Crosses that come in terms of your position, and I know we're going to talk about Oblak as well later in the show as well, a similar-ish kind of situation. When you're getting the cross that are coming in from wide as to where you take up your position, your angle of attack, as to whether you can come for the ball or whether you stay. Now, ultimately, if he stays on his line there, he doesn't get blamed, but they still score. So then does that mean then it's not a mistake, but by coming it is a mistake? Well, both end up being the same result. And this is where, ultimately, I guess a lot of it does come down to your initial starting position, and it's then the decision you make. And by understanding that people will critique you if you come and don't get there, more often than not, what ends up happening is we create a lot of safe goalkeepers that stay. Now, personally, I don't mind goalkeepers that do decide to approach the ball in the way that he has. Because he does come for a lot of crosses, Keller Roos. When anyone watches him play, he is quite a forward-thinking. He plays on the front foot. He comes for quite a lot of through balls, quite a lot of crosses. I would certainly rather a goalkeeper that plays with that mentality than a goalkeeper that does retreat to his line more often than not. But yes, he will be disappointed with two of those goals yesterday.
And finally, Thomas Holy of Ipswich. What a save. He summoned his inner Jordan Pickford from Colombia in the World Cup last year. Brilliant save to deny Joe Jacobson, who, by the way, seems to score every week for Wickham at the moment, but good at set pieces, good from dead balls, good at penalties, and Thomas Holy, top hand, brilliant.
Brilliant save, brilliant. Look, they've got a real battle on their hands there, the two goalkeepers. Of course, Will Norris on loan from Wolves, who seemingly went there to play, given that, of course, he's got championship experience.
Also saved a penalty in the FA Cup against Lincoln recently.
Yeah, of course. So, do you know what? I think, from what I understand, Will Norris has done very well when he's come in. So it is a real ding-dong battle. You've got two top goalkeepers, arguably two championship goalkeepers. Thomas Holy, of course, with Gillingham last season, had a successful season for them, moved to Ipswich. However, the impression that I got was that Will Norris would have played there. However, when Thomas Holy's played, he's played well. And certainly I get all the reports through, and I know the fans have really taken to him in a big way. He's, for those that haven't seen him, a giant of a man, about 6'7". And he is making a real name for himself. He was linked with some big, big clubs only a year or two back, the likes of Arsenal and a couple of other clubs. This save, it shows what he's about. You know, great power, spring to his right. Not many goalkeepers make that save, partly for the fact that not many goalkeepers have the physique that he has, but he's a big, strong, powerful lad. Top hand, good technique, great save. And in the end, it was 87th minute, it saved him a point.
Just switching back to the Premier League and the games from Sunday and Monday, Sheffield United 3, Manchester United 3. Great couple of saves from David De Gea. I want to stress, right, it wasn't a double save. I'm not having this. Everybody keeps saying, what a double save from David De Gea. He had time to make a cup of tea.
It depends what the terminology means. Does double save mean that it has to happen within a certain time frame?
Yes.
Does it have to happen within a second or 2 seconds?
Yes.
It's still the same phase of play.
It is. But I think a double save, to truly be a double save, is he's made another save. Not, oh. Yeah. Oh, they just, no. I'm sorry. It doesn't work.
I was waiting for the next oh.
I know, but I thought it's not going to be good.
Waiting.
It's not going to be good for radio.
Look, for me, I don't care whether it's a double save or not. They're two very good saves. The first one gets down well to his right. Lovely technique. I always love his technique in terms of the way in which he explodes down to his right. Good firm hand, good area. So no problem with that. Of course, the ball is then recycled. And then it's a save from close in again. What I would say, and these are both very good saves, neither's a 10 out of 10 save. They're both, for him, they're both 8 out of 10 saves. Like, they're not extraordinary saves, but it's good to see that he's getting himself back to a level now where there's very few goals going in that were questioning him anymore, which there were a lot last season. But he's getting back, it seems, to the goalkeeper that we saw the year before last in particular, where he was a man mountain, phenomenal. His statistics were through the roof. He's getting back to that, it feels. He looks confident. He's playing with a smile on his face. Very few goals going in, like I say, that we're questioning him about. And again, a couple of important saves. And in the end, they did get the points. So they were worthwhile saves as well.
Simon Moore for the third goal. He'd come in, made his first Premier League appearance, of course, because Dean Henderson is a Manchester United player on loan at Sheffield United. Was he at fault for Marcus Rashford putting United 3-2 up?
Not at fault. Right, so firstly for Simon, delighted for him. Of course, he was with me at Brentford. We were very close for several years, and it's incredible what he's gone on to achieve. And he's really found his club with Sheffield United. The fact that he went to Cardiff never quite worked out, but he went to Sheffield United League One, helped them get promotion from League One, played a big part for them in the Championship, certainly when it was him and Blackman fighting it out. And of course, Dean Henderson came in last season, but still a big part of the squad. So to finally make his Premier League debut, and against Manchester United, which, by the way, is exactly what I did. So I had the same situation at Watford. Ben Foster on loan from Manchester United to Watford meant he couldn't play against them. Dean Henderson on loan from Manchester United to Sheffield United. So we made our debuts in the Premier League, very similar circumstances. And I'm delighted that he was able to get a point in a game as big as this. Now, no chance on the first two goals. What's happened for me on the third goal, and this probably has something to do with the fact that it is his Premier League debut. Imagine, put yourself in his shoes, the biggest game of your life. You're finally making your Premier League debut. You're excited. Not only your Premier League debut, it's against Manchester United. You want to impact the game. You want to make saves. You want it to be your day. So what ends up happening for me is that it's coming in on the angle, and he's already in his mind made the decision. I'm going to run out and spread and make some fantastic save. And because he's already made the decision without necessarily fully assessing the situation, it's just the excitement for me. And so then as soon as he's seen him take the touch, he's run, he's jumped. And of course, as soon as they've set it back, he's already in motion and he's already gone. And of course, in the end, it doesn't look brilliant because he has gone and spread. And when it's cut back, it then leaves it as an empty goal. So he would certainly have done something different next time. Again, you know, I know we talk mistake. Is it a mistake or not a mistake? Look, error rating. There's an error there because it's the wrong decision. Now, look, it could be that he cuts it back and they still finish and score. So it wasn't 100% down to Simon Moore. But had he had that position or had that situation again, I'm sure he would like to have stayed, turned out, set in that half goal and looked to have made the save.
Commentary Corner. Commentary Corner is the Aston Villa 2 Newcastle United 0 game. Martin Dubravka for Villa's opener. Now, this created quite the debate. Well, both the goals did, to be fair, but this one in particular. Andy Hinchcliffe on the co-commentary, by the way, said Dubravka had no chance. But we go to the studio with Jamie Carragher and Gary Neville at halftime. Jamie Carragher, you have to look at the goalkeeper. The kick hasn't been taken. Look at the goalkeeper's position. Now the ball moves. The goalkeeper hasn't moved. And that gives them the opportunity to whip it round. Sometimes you've got to smell something. You see something's not quite right, and it wasn't right with the goalkeeper.
No, ridiculous. Just ridiculous. I mean, look, ultimately, it's not the goalkeeper, it's the wall. Now, where the goalkeeper might be at fault is if he's not involved in the decision-making when it comes to the wall. Because the second the ball shifted, the wall should have the intelligence. Not even just the intelligence. This might even come from the manager to understand that if they've moved the ball a yard, why are they doing it? They're doing it to create a different angle. The wall needs to move over. Because the second the goalkeeper goes, that then leaves you open to the reverse. And all of a sudden, they reverse it goalkeeper side. Then I blame the goalkeeper. Because you shouldn't move behind your wall. You can't see the ball. So you don't necessarily make the save at the near post because you can't see the ball. So for me, the ball moves. Make sure your wall moves. Now, this is a good lesson for all goalkeepers listening in. This might be where you have that conversation beforehand. Know who's in the wall and say, look, if it moves over, I need you all in unison to take one step to your right. You do that. And then it's status quo. We're back where we started. If they whip at your side, you've got it covered. They now still have to get it up and over the wall as opposed to around the wall. It's as simple as that.
Bada boom, bada bing. It's only a keeper caper.
Okay, keeper capers. And what a keeper caper we have this week. Antonio Toño Rodriguez of Chivas Guadalajara in Mexico. He scored a goal from inside his own 18-yard box. You've seen this. It was a Liga MX game. They were playing Veracruz and leading 2-1. The Veracruz goalkeeper, Sebastian Roca, had come up for a corner. Rodriguez collected it, actually took a bit of time to survey the situation, and then absolutely launched one to make it 3-1.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Look, the length that you need to get, I was trying to think when I play whether I could actually kick it that far. I don't think I could. And the fact that people are chasing it. So
it's not just evaded the final defender, yeah, as well. It's brilliant.
To be able to get that distance and the pace and the power and the accuracy and everything that comes with it, he's absolutely nailed it. And as you say, you've got defenders running back towards the goal. They can't get there. Look, it's a brilliant technique. Huge credit to him.
A few stats.
Go on.
It's the first time a Guadalajara goalkeeper had scored in the top flight. It's okay. The second time in the club's history that a goalkeeper had scored. Osvaldo Sanchez scored in a cup match back in 2000. That was a header, though, so it doesn't count. It's been 34 years since a goal like that, and they call it, you know, a goal-to-goal goal from a goalkeeper, since that has last happened in Mexican football. Twice it's happened to Veracruz, so tough luck on them. He'd spent 2 years on loan there before. He actually said after the game as well, I didn't know how to react. I don't know what it is to score a goal. I'd never scored a goal in my life.
Aww.
Rightly and wrongly.
Rightly or wrongly is from Spurs against Olympiacos this week. Interesting in the Champions League. Paulo Gazzaniga for the first goal from Youssef El Arabi. Now, Glenn Hoddle again on commentary. For me, the keeper is far too deep in his goal. We've seen it at the moment with lots of goalkeepers. I don't know why they go so deep. For me, the keeper has to save it anyway. If he's on his six-yard box, he saves it anyway. He then goes, Rio, like, passes it over to Rio Ferdinand. Rio Ferdinand, he shuts the angle down a little bit. Yeah, listen, gets over there, but his hand's not at the right height. If his hand's a bit lower, he saves the ball. The ball maybe has dipped a little bit. He'll be so disappointed.
Oh, man. Do you know what? So you sent me this. I must have been sent this by 7 different people yesterday just because it was like, Rich, what do you think of this? And like, angry face, angry face, angry face. Do you know what? I don't even know what to say anymore. Like, narrow the angle. You're 25 yards. What angle is there? So if anything, and by the way, when the ball's like moving like that, what about that strike we see so often where they strike it high and it dips under the bar? If anything, my thinking is a yard or 2 yards off your line is absolutely perfect. You give yourself reaction time. You're able to get across the goal anyway from that position. So whether you're 6 yards or 2 yards makes very little difference. However, if you're 6 yards, you are susceptible to be beaten over your head. Plus, you have less reaction time. So Gazzaniga's done nothing wrong. He actually gets to the ball. It's only the movement on the ball that means it evades his hand. Otherwise, I think he makes a save. So goalkeeper's done nothing wrong. Dreadful commentary. Look, it is what it is. And I know you do this to wind me up from time to time. And it's just really, really poor analysis of goalkeeping.
Okay, we'll finish on that one there. Jan Oblak free kick from Paulo Dybala in the Juventus-Atletico Madrid game. Now, Michael Owen said the goalkeeper definitely at fault here.
Yeah, it's a strange one. And look, I'm always careful to, of course, I'll look to back up goalkeepers where I can, because that's what we're here. Not necessarily what we're here for. I try and critique goalkeepers appropriately. That's what we do. It's not necessarily that it's always, nope, not the goalkeeper's fault. And I want to make that clear, because people say that to me sometimes. Oh, you always back the goalkeeper. What I try and do is explain why it might have happened, because this is an odd one for me. It's on the angle. It's pretty much, if you look where he starts his position, it's pretty much gone just over his head, clipped the bar and gone in. So if you were to take all the other players out of this equation and someone shot from that angle, that far away, and it's gone just over your head, you would save it 100 times out of 100. So why hasn't he saved it? Well, I've looked at this so many times. The only thing I can think is that he has got players in his way. I wonder whether he lost sight of the ball briefly, because he moves over to his left towards the near post, which then means he can't reach the ball. The pace, it's very, very well hit. So the pace beats him. He's got a player just in front of him. So I think it's more so the fact that he's got players in front that may well have got in the way of the ball, may well have made him lose slight focus. I think that's the only reason that this has gone in, because he will be disappointed. You were to look at from where it struck, where it goes in, 100 times out of 100 he saves it if no other players are on the pitch.
Yeah, and we are nitpicking. He has been consistently excellent for the past few seasons now. Okay, this has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast Between the Sticks in association with GK Icon, Goalkeepers 365 and Love Sport Radio. We'll see you next time.